The story behind the song. Today, the words United States of America symbolize to the world impregnable strength, a nation offering opportunity, peace, and well-being to all those who live within its vast boundaries. Time was, however, when the infant republic, but a few years old, presented a far different picture. The year is 1798, the scene, Mount Vernon, the home of the country's first ex-president, George Washington. A distinguished visitor sits with the 66-year-old soldier executive before the dying embers of a great log fire. It is the country's second president, John Adams. The two gaze solemnly into the glowing coals in silence. A huge clock ticks the passing seconds off slowly. Then, at length, the elder of the two speaks.
No, I cannot bring myself to face it.
But, General Washington, you have helped to create this nation. You are the one man in America who can unify the people once more into concerted thinking.
Unify? John Adams, I've been able to stand the rigors of revolution. I've weathered the bitter days of conflict and the harrowing nights of interminable planning for the morrow. I've faced the outbreaks of a citizen soldiery against inadequate shelter, meager rations, and scant clothing. And I've stood ever with that gallant band of zealots who have spared nothing to pull these United States out from the mire of despotism into the radiant light of liberty. But I have not stood well the broadside salvos from the mouths of my critics during my two terms of office.
No, General.
One moment, John. Ere you arrived this evening, I was fingering over some of those outbursts. Here's one. A caricature. That is my figure there, John. That is I, with my head on the block of that guillotine. Here's another. Listen to this. If ever a nation was debauched by a man, the American nation has been debauched by Washington. Does that sound like a memorial to the man who, you say, could unify the nation? No, John, I cannot go forth again into public life. I am old. My strength is gone, like the spent flames of that fire there before us.
So? Well, then?
Well, what are you doing?
I am throwing another log in there. I am rekindling that flame which you think is spent.
Never were you the man to accept a no without qualification. Very well, President John Adams, I resign my weak body and my tired mind to your command.
That is that you accept the commission of Lieutenant General in the Army of the United States should it be necessary to meet an emergency. Your hand.
Aye, my hand, John.
A few days later, on Saturday evening, in the private room of a tavern in the city of Philadelphia, a group of young men sat around a table, vehemently discussing the current and universal topic of conversation, the nation's plight. A young actor-singer, Gilbert Fox, pounds the tabletop for attention.
A moment, my friend. One moment, I beg you. What are we, men or beasts, that we are ready to tear each other apart because of a difference in political opinion?
You talk of us, Master Fox. What of the very Congress of the United States?
Yes, what about the Congress? Wait, my friend, wait. I know this. The very men whose foresight led this country through the war against the tyranny of England and were united as one body then are divided now upon the question, shall the United States of America render assistance to the cause of the revolution in France? As for myself, I say no.
Oh, what do you know of politics in the nation's good, Gilbert Fox? You are but an actor.
Wait a moment, friend. Just one moment. Our good friend Joseph Hopkinson has been sitting here in silence for more than an hour. Of all of us, you, Master Hopkinson, are most qualified to express an opinion. What say you? Should this nation give assistance to the French Revolution? France gave us help when we most needed it.
Speak, Joseph, what say you?
Well, my friends, I so firmly believe we are facing the wrong question. I believe the nation and the nation's leaders are facing the wrong question. It is not, shall we assist France? It is rather, shall this young nation perform any act which might perchance lead us into civil war?
Civil war? Joseph, you know not of what you speak.
I think I do know what I speak. Gilbert, you and I attended school together. We've known each other long years. You know me well enough to realize I never leap into a decision.
Yes, I admit that.
The links of the chain which bind these separate states together in a union, my friends, are weakly forged. It would take but a small flame to burn them through. And it would be but one little spark of misjudgment which would ignite the tinder of political differences into the flaming inferno of civil war. So, I say, if we are to escape internal conflict within our boundaries, we must stand firm, united, as a band of brothers, rallying around the liberty for which our fathers fought. If we do so stand, that chain will be ever stronger, and we shall find peace and safety.
Joseph?
Yes, Gilbert?
4 evenings from tonight, on Tuesday, I am to give a performance at my theater. I want to do something which may, in some small measure, help our people to see the light of the truth you have just spoken.
Yes?
Joseph, will you write for me a song?
A song?
Aye, a song which will inspire all who hear it to see the sound reason you have just expressed to us. No speech can do it. No act of the Congress can do it. No amount of public discussion can do it. But a song can and must.
That sounds like a good suggestion.
General Washington stands ready to fight for the preservation of the Union should that need arise. But we, every mother's son of us, must see to it that it does not arise. Are we agreed? Then, Joseph, will you write that song?
Yes, I will, Gilbert. I shall write it to the President's March in honor of President Adams and General Washington.
Bravo, Joseph! Bravo!
The next day, Sunday, Joseph Hopkinson delivered the completed lyrics for the new song. On the following Tuesday, Gilbert Fox sang it for the first time to a packed theater. A moment's pause followed this initial rendition. Then a tumultuous thunder of applause and vocal approbation swept the theater. More, more, the audience cried. Men leaped into their seats, shouting lustily for an encore. Women waved their handkerchiefs, and Fox sang the inspirational anthem again and again and again. After the 7th encore, the audience joined heartily in the chorus, and at last left the theater with a dramatic new vision of the true meaning of liberty and union. The nation met the new song with such popular acclaim that President Adams and his cabinet decided they must hear for themselves the triumphant measures of Joseph Hopkinson's anthem. Following this performance, Gilbert Fox was summoned to appear at the presidential box.
Mr. President, this is Mr. Gilbert Fox, the singer.
Mr. Fox.
Mr. President.
And these gentlemen, Mr. Fox, are the members of my cabinet.
It is indeed an honor.
Gentlemen.
Mr. Fox, you cannot know what you have done for your country.
Thank you, sir. But I fear the real acclaim must go to my friend, Joseph Hopkinson.
Well, where is he? Is he here in the theater tonight?
Yes, sir, he is. I asked him to accompany me here to meet you, but he was reticent.
Oh, I wish I had known. I should have summoned him, too. I must meet him. I must tell him what surging emotions his song stirred in my soul tonight. I must tell him, as he must already have been told many times, of the tremendous service he has rendered to the United States. I must tell him that to the day of my death, I shall never forget the rebirth of a united liberty which I witnessed here in this theater tonight through the singing of his song.
Along the happy land.